Okay, so anyway, he succeeded. He blew up the Kyoto Imperial Palace. And we're a renegade terrorist group. And guess who's the next one we sent? Should we get to New York again? No, we already had enough. Let's get Paris. The Eiffel Tower goes on my nerves. A lot of steel. We melt that down to use it for our pots and pans with the poor in China. So we sent Bill Keith, the ninja out, this time the kids. And he's like, no, I don't do black. Yes, you do. Why? You have your guru devotion. Please make an exception. Why?
Who runs around in a white ninja outfit? Everybody will see you. Can you imagine him in the night and running around in Paris? Who's that white thing? Black can all see, white can't. So what Bill does is this. He wears black with a strip of white. Never mind. Nobody saw that. Nobody saw that because when he was running, he covered it, you know. So he's going over there to blow the Eiffel Tower to make a statement. What's the statement? We don't like the dog crap all over the city, and we're getting tired of stepping all over it. Clean it up, or we're blowing up the Eiffel Tower. That's Bill's statement. And viva la Buddhist. And he didn't get caught because he didn't pant along the way. He had a taxi waiting for him. He spoke a little French. He learned his lesson from Ninja Koki. That's right. And then guess who we send next? We send them to the Leaning Tower of Pisa. For God's sake, let it fall already. It's been leaning and leaning. Everybody under it's like, oh. Can you imagine those Italians on their way to getting pizza? They go there, let's go buy. Uh-oh, quick, get our pizza. And they're under there eating pizza. And guess they have to run. Imagine some little old lady sitting there with their dog. The dog's peeing, the Leaning T pizza's like this. And the dog's like, hurry up, Fido. Hurry, pee-pee, goodbye, pee-pee. And the Leaning Tower is going like that, falling. And the dog's not finishing, so she drags the dog. Can kill the doggy. Ah, yeah, let's get rid of that tower. Let's blow it up and fall for once and for all and get it down and rebuild it, la. So guess who we send there to do that job? We send Girlie Ui in a black ninja outfit with her glasses. Because if you don't give her glasses, she don't know where to put the dynamite. Can you see her at the Tower of Pisa at the bottom, at the base? She's like, now let me read my instructions. Place the dynamite for... Oh, place it here. And number two, get a match. If it's raining, use a lighter and light it. That's Girlie Ui. She's a very school teacher thing. And then number three, after I light it, I run. She's not Singaporean. Leave her alone. So and then there's a footnote on the bottom. Oh, there's an asterisk. Let me see. Oh, and run fast. She makes a statement. The Leaning Pizza falls. They rebuild it so the people can eat pizza happily. And before she leaves, she put our Kichara House flag there. Viva la Kichara. Isn't that interesting? And the last place we need to target. The last place. The very last place. Do you all know where? Can you guys think or imagine? Doesn't the Big Ben get on your nerves? You're walking on London, dong. You're like, oh. You know, people who work in the Big Ben, you know, their ears, they can't hear anymore. And they don't even get any pension for that. Doesn't the Big Ben just really get on your nerves? So we need to make a statement over there. We really need to make a statement over there. That's right. You know who we're sending there? Rajaswari. She's in a black ninja outfit, but it's a sari, black sari. Indian women don't do pants. So she said. So she gets a black sari outfit, you know, all ninja, and she's got to make sure her hair looks good too because she's going overseas, you know? She's been overseas once. Oh, twice. Okay. So she gets in her black sari and gets her ninja outfit. She takes her plane and she ends up in Delhi. Now let me see. Where's the Big Ben? Where is the Big Ben? She just blows up the airport and comes back here. Indira International, and then the airport's like, oh, we're used to it. They're always trying to blow up the airport. What else is new? Get in line. But she still plants her flag there. Viva la Dharma, viva la KH. That's right. But she planted it in the wrong place. And she had three flags. She left one in the ladies because she was checking her hair. Very interesting. That's why Dharma centers are going to grow. It's going to get bigger and bigger because they're places of, they serve as places of worship. They serve as places to get education because we don't have Dharma schools. We don't have Dharma colleges. We don't have Dharma institutions really here. If we do, it's very far and in between, very few. So the centers serve as places for education for Buddhists to become better citizens of a country, not to make other citizens Buddhists, but to make the Buddhists of the country better citizens of their country. That's the purpose of the Dharma centers everywhere. And they're places for people to meditate, to find themselves. They're places for people to do rituals to avert problems and difficulties. They're places where people have commitments and gather and do their commitments and do their prayers. They're places where it's a place where the center is a place where people can find a spiritual home. They can go there and listen to the truth and listen to something good and practice. Places are centers for people to grow and improve. And because this is beneficial, more and more centers will open in the future. More and more centers definitely open in the future. So within these centers, to run them, we need committees. And the committees are chosen by various means, sometimes by divination, sometimes by the Lama, sometimes by voting within house. There are many methods and many ways to become a committee. So when we become a committee of a center, it is assumed we are devoted to our Lama. It is assumed. We are devoted to our Lama. We are devoted to the Dharma, inner and outer growth of Dharma. We are devoted. It is assumed. It is assumed that when we're part of the committee, that we will follow the statutes that's required by the law for the committee, and we will follow the rules and regulations of the center, and especially to hold our commitments. Because when we are committee, we are in a very special position to be examples and inspirations to others. Some of us may have been put in a committee where we're not used to being inspirations or an example to others. Well, this is our chance. When can we become an inspiration? When can we be an example? When? We can be an inspiration example when we're put in a position where we have to. What in life have we done that we were totally prepared and then we do it? Or what in life have we been pushed into what we're doing and then we become good at it because we have no choice? So sometimes the lamas and protectors or members are very kind. Sometimes they put qualified people in positions of committee, and sometimes they put people who will become qualified. If the people who are qualified are devoted to the lama and they're devoted to the growth of Dharma, they will carry their positions out very well according to the statutes of the country and also the statutes of Lord Buddha's teachings. Very simple. And for those people who are new in committees and subcommittees, and they've never done this, and it's scary and it's frightening, and they're new and they're thinking, why me, why me? Maybe because you have a potential that you haven't seen yourself. So if you always suppress that potential, if you always suppress that potential and not push yourself, how will you ever inspire? How will you ever grow? So when we're in any committees or we're in subcommittees, the name of the game is this. For the committee itself is to follow the statutes of the law of the country so the center can thrive and grow and expand, and it doesn't make any problems for the citizens of this country and break any laws. So the committees have that responsibility, especially to protect the country, protect the rules, and to follow the rules of the country. That's the purpose of a committee. And along with that, the committee would do it. Why? Because they're very devoted to the Lama. Being a committee of a center and doing that is equivalent to doing retreats. Why? Retreats are for attainments. How? By collection of merits and purification of negative karma. So therefore, if we do committee work, isn't it the same thing? It's exactly the same thing, just a different outside mask. So therefore, being a committee is a perfect opportunity for us to start from this level, or this level, for attainments. Don't be selective in the Dharma. If I do this, I get attainments. If I do that, I get attainments. If I don't do this, I don't do that, I don't get attainments. Don't be selective. How much do you know to know what you can gain and not gain from what path of Dharma? How do you know? In the monastery of Ganden, for any of the staff that are elected into position, let me tell you something. They are praised, they are given gifts, and they are very much respected. Why? Because they run the whole monastery, and they make things grow for all the meditators and all the masters and all the teachers. And if any monk dare talk back or be offensive to any of the administrators of the monastery, any of the liaisons or committee of the monastery, it is a very big offense. The Kumzengen or the house teacher, example, my house is Puang Kumzengen, the house teacher will deal with the monk and talk to him. Why did you speak like that? Why did you act like that? And if that can be resolved at that time, okay, depending on the offense. If that cannot be resolved, it will be taken up with the abbot himself and the heads of 12 houses. And some monks have been expelled for that offense. Why? Because committee members and liaison members, all that hold a very important position, because they do very important work. You may be meditating in a forest, or you may be meditating in Ganden Monastery, but how can your meditation happen if someone's not running the monastery? It's wonderful to walk in there and do retreats and do prayers and do mantras and learn the Dharma and say how wonderful and dedicate. But if you don't contribute to its growth and contribute to its learning and its meditation and its practices, how do you expect it to survive? Therefore, what's the difference with someone who meditates or someone who runs the meditation center? In fact, I feel, now listen carefully, those who run the meditation centers as committee and vice committees collect more merit than the meditators, because they have to deal with real life situations that challenge their spiritual growth all the time. People, there's a story of a meditator who was at peace and happy and never got angry and achieved his Avalokiteshvara's practice, or whatever practice he was doing in the mountains. He never got pissed off, never. He was very calm and he was very happy. And he was in his cave for about 12 years. So he achieved what he thought he wanted to achieve. He left the cave. On the way, he met somebody walking, and they didn't clear the path. The path was small. The guy didn't move over for the meditator monk. So the meditator monk went up there and saw that he was not respected for his attainments and his practice. He got angry, and he scolded. And he said, "You should get out of the way. I'm a hermit. You're a normal layperson. Get out of the way." The hermit said, "Oh, you're a meditator. What have you meditated on?" And then end the conversation. So when we are in a cave, or we're in the confines of our house or our shrine room, where we're sitting there all peaceful and happy and meditating on universal Buddhas, it's very easy. Why? Nothing to challenge you, nothing to irk you, nothing to bring out the dirt. Nothing. When you are a committee, or you're a vice committee, or you're in a position of a center, it's like an x-ray. You get to see all your problems and points. So actually, it's a blessing. It is a blessing, and it is beneficial to be in that position if you want to advance in your Dharma practice. Why? Then you can see how strong your spiritual conviction is, A. B, how strong it is in dealing with others, and how to overcome problems. And three, if you're dedicating all the time for the sake of all sentient beings, for the sake of all sentient beings, may you become a fully enlightened Buddha, you're dedicating all the time. Why think about all sentient beings when you can't even take care of 100 or 200 sentient beings in the center? And how do you expect to take care of sentient beings? How? How do you expect? Sit on a cloud and give them a rain of Dharma, and then from your vase, and you pour nectar on them, and they all become enlightened? Go back to fantasy land. It doesn't happen. How do you work for all sentient beings? How can you have the ability to work for all sentient beings? You start with one, with two, with three, with four. Once you start with one, two, three, or four, you dedicate. From that person or those people, you gain the merits and the experience to deal with eight, to deal with 20, to deal with 30, 100, 200. And then, you're able to deal with thousands. And then you can deal with all sentient beings. Do you think His Holiness the Dalai Lama became the Dalai Lama overnight, and he can talk to 40, 50, 400, 500,000 people at one time and not lose his composure and be focused and talk in such a way that it pleases everybody and makes most people happy? It didn't come overnight. People like the Dalai Lama practice over many, many lifetimes. Many lifetimes. Where what they say can influence 400,000 or 500,000 people's minds. Why? Because they started with one person, two person, three person. That is a bodhisattva's way of going toward Buddhahood. Is you start one, two, three, four, five. And don't make excuses. Just stick with one person. Don't stick with just one person. Why? It might be your laziness getting in the way, saying, oh, I can just take care of one person. You take one person for the rest of your life. A dog can take care of one dog. One mother dog can take care of one baby dog. I'm sure you can take care of more. So therefore, when you're in a committee position, when you're doing committee work, your responsibility is what? A, to make sure the center abides by the law of the land and the law of Buddhism. B, to sharpen your bodhisattva intention, to sharpen your bodhicitta attainments. How? By working with people that you ordinarily would not work with, by working with difficult people, by working in situations that you find difficult, and by working with situations that are difficult and you have overcome them. Why? Why does overcoming them mean anything? You grow. And the whole situation allowed you to grow. And what are you growing in? In a company selling more cars? No. In bringing attainments to other people. And therefore, you collect merit. Think about that. So committees have a special responsibility. And they are in retreat. Committees are in retreat. Why? You're dealing with yourself. And it's very, very, very clear and very direct with how you deal with yourself because of how you react with other people. Committees must deal with people who don't do their work, people who are perpetually late in submitting their work, people who always complain, people who always look for small problems and make it big, people who are not there to actually practice. They have to deal with people who really want to practice, and that's a bigger challenge. Why? Because it makes you learn. That's another reason I ask people of all backgrounds to work in the Dharma shop. Why? Do you think I'm trying to make more business? If you think that, you're going the wrong way. Working in the Dharma shop will benefit you more. Why? There's a lot of things you don't know, and there's a lot of things you already know in the Dharma. When you work there, you have a chance to exercise what you have learned. When you exercise what you have learned, you will not forget. When you don't forget, when you do your actual meditation practices or retreats, you will gain attainments. Why? How can you gain and how can you gain attainments from things you can't even remember what to do or the teachings? So how to exercise that is that when you meet new people coming in the streets and they ask you questions, sure, there's a lot of things that you don't know. Write down what you don't know. Find out. Get the email. Email them back. That is your own Dharma practice to spread Dharma to others. If you say, I don't know. I'm not a social type. I can't talk. I don't know. I can't talk. It's okay. But you can become a social type. You can become someone that's beneficial. Everything is impermanent. Everything is a label we put on it. So when we work in a Dharma shop, when we work in a Dharma shop, it really exercises our knowledge and makes us to remember and challenges us to remember and makes us want to benefit others. And when you come across people in Dharma shop who you can help and you can give them a guiding light, it is very satisfactory. And everything's set up to do that. Like the people who work in the Dharma shops, the outlets, and similarly volunteers and similarly committee members, it is all exactly the same. Why is it the same? It challenges you to go beyond your comfort zone. When you go beyond your comfort zone, that is an attainment. So therefore, if we're devoted to the Lama, if we're devoted to the Dharma Center, or we're devoted to the growth of Dharma, or we're devoted to our own Dharma growth, then we'll be very, very energetic in doing committee, outlet, subcommittee work. If we are not devoted to our real spiritual practice and we want to be comfortable in our comfort zone, then we will not be comfortable in it. Why? Think. Think. It's very logical. So if the Lama gives you a position and you happily take it, or you unhappily take it, but you become happy, it means you're growing. Why does it mean you're growing? Because you've challenged yourself out of devotion to your Lama, to yourself. Devoting to your Lama means devoting to yourself, and I will talk about that in the Guru Devotion teachings. Devoting yourself to the Lama is the first step to finding freedom and independence. Definitely. Then, volunteers who come to the center. Volunteers. Actually, There's a lot of volunteers. There's a lot of people who want to do things. And they're dying to do things. And they want to do things. But they want to do things the way they want to do it. They're not different than you. They have their own comfort zones too. So it's important for people in positions in the center, as committees, as liaisons, as subcommittees, or whatnot, to be an example to the volunteers. If you yourself tell people, oh, I'm not able to do this, I don't know this, I'm lazy to learn that, I don't want to do this, I don't feel good, you disappoint me. If you say that, how will you get volunteers? That is your personality shining through, that you give up easy. So to get volunteers is quite easy. It's quite easy. Very easy. How? You need to be a beacon of inspiration. How? Overnight, no. If our lighthouse is not lighting the way 24/7, we can light the lighthouse maybe 1 or 2 hours a day and slowly make it burn more and more and more. To be all or nothing is very, very selfish. Why? It's our impatience that arises from selfish mind. To either all or nothing. I don't attain this in one night, I'm not doing it. I don't get this result in one night, I'm not doing it. All or nothing attitude is selfish. All or nothing attitude is selfish. Why is it selfish? What can be attained overnight? What can be obtained or attained overnight? Nothing. So therefore, nothing can be attained. None of us in this room who has any success in what we're doing, or we've seen success in our parents or people around us, has attained that overnight. No. Definitely not. So therefore, for volunteers to come in, A, organization is very important. To, in the center, to identify what departments are in need of help and assistance, what departments need to improve, why is it not improving, and instead of pointing fingers at people, because everybody knows who is doing nothing and who is doing something and who is always not able to make it and who is always not able to do this or do that due to their own little lame excuses. Everybody knows who everybody is. We just don't talk about it out of respect. So instead of in a meeting pointing fingers at people to say you're like this, if they're already sneaky and they don't do this, or they're already lazy, or they're already very selfish, by pointing them out, you'll increase their selfishness, increase their laziness, increase their bad habits. Why? They'll go deeper into their shell. They're used to doing that. So in a meeting, instead of pointing all that out to people, it's not a matter of giving people face, it's compassion. It's to talk about it in general. Everybody knows everybody who it is, but we don't need to point fingers. Why? Everybody will go past that stage if we give love and support. What's love? Patience. What's support? To help them. To help them. So therefore, if we want to get volunteers, we have plenty of people who want to volunteer. Plenty. 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 I'll give you a very simple example because we have plenty of people, but it's very recent. I wanted to do a survey for the outlets for all the volunteers that come in and to ask them, In their own thinking, what should we improve? What's their comments? What can they add to the stores? What can we do to attract more people? Just simple survey. So I contacted one of my liaisons to contact Ms. Shin to do that. And she was very happy to take the job, I was told. She was very, very happy to take the job. She immediately registered everything, and in her workplace, she even wrote out the forms, and I gave the request in the afternoon. By evening, I already received a 3-page point form typed out by Shin, who was ready to distribute in the outlets, and some more. I get an SMS back saying, thank you. There are people like this young lady who's dying to do things, dying. But just because now we know she's dying to do things, not all of us, all 20 committees run to her and do this, do that, do this, do that, do that. No. But what I'm saying is we have the resources in here to do what we want if we know how to tap into them. We need to identify what people like to do and what they're good at. We need to identify. That's why I took a survey in the center of what people's jobs are. That's what committee people should do. Find out what everybody does. What everybody does. What's their job? What's their livelihood? To be nosy? No. Because people want to help. People are interested to help. People are kind to help. So we need to know what they are good at. If we know what they're good at, then we know how to tap into their resources, their mental and their physical and their time resources. And then I also asked Shin to please collect from the outlet member, outlet managers once a week all the forms and compile them and put them on the net for me and get them together so that I can share with my liaisons and outlet people what we can do to improve the outlets. Why? Because we love the Dharma. We love our outlets. We love spreading Dharma to other people. Very simple. David was telling me the other day he was doing his 55 a day, 55 ringgit a day sale at the outlets. Without him, we'd be finished. And he was there when Mr. Na was there. And he told me the minute he walked in, Mr. Na cornered him and started talking to him all his ideas about the outlet. And I thought, wow. Now, how do we tap into Mr. Ngao's zest and care? I didn't think, oh, what a big mouth shooting off and telling us all kinds of things that we don't need. I didn't think that. I told David, what did he say? And David's like, well, a lot. And I wasn't really, Now, there are certain things, if you want to talk about David, he has everything to tell you, but it's about improving the outlets. Well, that's not a resource we can tap into, David Lai. And it's spelled L-A-I, now L-I-E. Now, so when I heard that about Mr. Ngao, that's immediately how I got the idea of doing a survey form. It was inspired by Mr. Ngao and partly by David telling me that. The minute I heard Mr. Ngao in DMT shooting off and saying how we can improve, I thought two things immediately. Get him on the outlet improvement committee. He's just doing a little hospital thing, a little teeny hospital in Gandan, 3,000 monks. Ah, that's easy. He can just go like that and see a $3,000, 300,000 la. Then I thought, he's bored. He's losing his hair because he's bored. From worry, he's sitting at home in his big bungalow house in Section 14, praying someone robs him so he has something to do, report to the police. He's bored silly. His sons and children are all grown up. They're successful due to the good job that the two parents have done. He's worked hard his whole life. Now he's going to devote the rest of his life to cherry blossoms and Dharma. Here he is. And so he goes to the outlets, a respectable gentleman. Respectable means what? He's older. And he's learned. And in Asia, we respect elders. Volunteer himself. Not lower himself. Volunteer himself out of love of Dharma to work in the DMT. And I don't know, harass what customers to buy what, because I didn't hear he sold anything. But he was sitting there telling David, tells you he's not psychic, all types of ideas he has on improving the outlets. And immediately I thought, oh my God, volunteer saying that. So that's why I immediately contacted my people to contact Shin to get that out. That's how my ideas came. Some people had the title liaison of business, but I'm really the liaison of business. That's right. So that idea came from that. I thought, interview everybody, talk to everybody. And we have all these wonderful people going in, including Margaret, but don't tell Rinpoche. Who's going to do sales? Margaret loves to do Dharma sales, loves it. Because if she doesn't love it, I'm taking my statue back. And you know which one I'm talking about, sister. So I'm just waiting to see you on the roster, what day you're there for, 8 hours. Not 4 hours there and 4 hours on the telephone talking to your 25 boyfriends. Margaret has this gift. She attracts human beings to her of the male gender. She just walks down the street and everybody's like... What is that called? Phenolons or whatever, or something. Those things that emit by females. And most males are interested in it. That's right. So Margaret's the kind of lady, she just walks by. She didn't do her hair, nothing. She just walks by and people... That's it. If you check her handphone, it's mostly males. Oh, she doesn't do anything more than that. She's a very nice lady. She doesn't do anything more. No. Nothing more than that. She just let them have a sniff and go away. I mean, she can't help it. She's got to go outside, so she's got body odor. What? You can't expect her to run around in a plastic bag with two holes. So she's definitely going to work in a Dharma shop. She's going to sell a lot of things because she's going to turn on that charm. She's going to get an initiation called the hand initiation from Suzanne. And then she go to the outlets and go, Baila. Suzanne has a special initiation. She's a top salesperson because she pushes herself. All jokes aside, I respect her. She has she's very friendly with people. Her previous life was in America for the last 100 lifetimes. That's why in this life in Malaysia, she's still touching everybody. Baila, buy one, get me free. Bye. She's a nice girl too, because when they come to get her free, she says, oh, sorry, out of stock. No, she's like Margaret, nice girl. No, not like that. And then, is there any not nice girls here? I'll give you a hint. It's the capital city of France. But that's only in her fantasies. Because I talked to this capital city of France lady, and I said, some people suspect you're having an affair. She said to me, I wish I had an affair. God, I wish that would happen. Wish. I'm like, huh? Thank God she's not in Israel 2,600 years ago. We would have gotten the stones ready for you. And then I walk up and say, those without sin cast the first stone. That's right. Some of you know. Some of you are looking at me like, what? Rajeshwari is like, cast first stone now. She didn't go back and ask Jiva. Oh, now I understand. That's right. Jivana understands, but Rajeshwari is like, really? She looked at me like, she has that I don't really understand look. But she's trying to look like she understands. So in any case, she'll find out from Jivan. Jivan will tell her in one short sentence. Their sentences are very short. Translates, Jesus Christ. Okay. Now, so we have volunteers. We have people that want to help. A, we must inspire them. You know how we inspire them? Sitting on a lotus, wearing an Amitabha Buddha Halloween costume. You know, Halloween costume all red. We sit there, I'm Amitabha. No, that ain't going to work because people are not that stupid anymore. How to inspire them? You attend the classes. You volunteer at the outlets. You make it for Dharma talks. You go for pujas on a regular basis. Then you will inspire them. As Crystal has inspired us. That's how you inspire people. No one's asking you to tell their fortune. No one's telling them how many fairies you got dancing around inside your brain. No one needs to know their previous life and future life. No one needs to have you blow on them and chase away the storm clouds. No one's waiting for you to go outside and blow into the sky and make the weather fabulous. But what they expect from you is you show human persistence, enthusiasm, devotion, and effort. You will inspire people. So you as a committee member, you as a subcommittee, you as a liaison, you as a member of a Dharma community, show respect to other people. You be alert during Dharma teachings. You listen to the Dharma. You attend the pujas. You absorb the knowledge and you yourself practice. And when you do that, whether inside you're becoming a Buddha or not, on the outside people see your effort. When people see your effort on the outside, they will be inspired. It's very simple. That's something we all can achieve. So that's the first step in harnessing volunteers' help. The second thing is the people who are in the positions should identify what needs to be helped and identify what needs to be done in the center, the inverted commas weak points, without pointing fingers. Why without pointing fingers? Nothing is accomplished by hurting people. Nothing. Nothing is ever accomplished by hurting or damaging people. Nothing. Everything is accomplished by giving them love and care and understanding. And forgiving them and forgiving yourself. Everything is accomplished. Even if they've done you very bad damage, to forgive them. So, then when you identify, you guide the volunteers. You guide the volunteers. You make yourself available for the volunteers. And you can break it up. One person can take care of 4 volunteers, 3 volunteers, 5 volunteers. And you be available for the volunteers that they can contact you. And they can talk to you by email, by telephone. And you be a big brother or a big sister to them. And I'm not talking about Koki because he's big and he's your big brother. I'm talking about inside big. So I don't want Koki running around saying, I'm your big brother. Doesn't Koki look like a Chinese Fat Albert? Okay, he doesn't. He looks better a little. Bill is trying not to look. This is Bill's way of not laughing out loud. This is Bill's mudra of thinking. He's thinking very deep. That's right. When he's thinking, oh, there they too. Andy too. When Andy's thinking, Bill's thinking. Ding, ding. It's like a typewriter. And this is Andy's way of not laughing out loud. Have you seen that when Andy's really happy, he's laughing about something, and he's trying to control himself? Yeah, that's right. That's how Andy looks. Mr. Ngao, he's the hearty type. He just lets you know he's happy. When he's laughing, he's like... The hair doesn't move, but he's laughing. And that's right. This is how girly Uy laughs. And when we're talking about somebody else, this is how Margaret laughed, not about, she's like, I don't know, this movement came out suddenly. Wasn't like that before. Angel doesn't laugh because she doesn't know when she's supposed to laugh. She waits for signals from her husband. This is laugh, this is don't laugh. Really? Mrs. Ngao laughs too once in a blue moon. When she laughs, it's just like this. That's how Mrs. Ngao laughs. I love it. Everybody's got their unique style. Jenny, she's like, oh. She's careful. She's a very aware person. She wants to be aware when she's allowed to laugh. Ooh, on cue, who's that? DHL man's here. Now, I didn't say 5 minutes, I said just a quick break. Very suggestive. If you pay me, I can be influenced to take a 5 minute break. You just say, tell me, brapa. Berapa. That's why I like that, berapa. I love it. Oh, every word's got an R and it's very, very Italian. I like it. Okay. So, the secrets to volunteers. The secret is, we ourselves must inspire the volunteers. And when I say inspire, please don't make it such a big, sweeping statement that we need to be of some huge, incredible, monumental level to inspire. No. Very basic human qualities will inspire volunteers. That is our own enthusiasm, our own perseverance, our own trial and error. And as I was advised by my gurus in the past, sometimes my gurus are very clairvoyant. One of my gurus just out of the blue told me, sometimes when you're depressed, sometimes when you feel down, sometimes when you feel not happy, he said, read the biographies of other high lamas, read the biographies of other practitioners and other masters. It will be a definite picker-upper, and it's true. And we don't have to read biographies of only high lamas. We can read biographies of other practitioners. And I've sent them by email, like Shunsep Jetsun. I've sent to some people. And by reading those, it inspires us because they went through the same things we went through, and they made it, and we find out how they made it. And it's always very beautiful to know that we're not alone. So we should read biographies of lamas and teachers and masters and mahasiddhas again and again and again, and it will pick us up, I guarantee you. That's what I was advised, and I do that quite often. So therefore, I'm a big fan of biographies. And I even read biographies of celebrities and well-known people of the world and all types of people. Why? Because they may not be aspiring to a dharma, but they made themselves something in life. It's not something I want to do, but their tenacity and their endurance and what they went through inspires me also. Why? If they can work so hard just to be rich, or they can work so hard just to be famous, or they can work so hard just to feel they've gotten the ingredients of happiness, I can sure work harder for Dharma. Because what they get really is not lasting. So I get quite inspired by biographies. I always look for biographies. And therefore, I'm not looking for preeminent qualities here. You make it for pujas. If you can make it once every 2 weeks, make sure you make it 2 weeks. Every week, you make it regular. And you yourselves don't make all types of excuses to other people why you can't make it. Why? Because when you make excuses that people can see through, valid or not valid, you will allow them and set an example for them to make excuses too. It's very simple. Very, very simple. And make it for pujas. Make it for Dharma teachings. The whole point of having a center is to have Dharma teachings. That is why in all religious institutions, Buddhist, the throne is in the center. Even in Thailand, the throne is central, in front of the Buddha. Why? How to achieve Buddhahood is by the teachings. And you make a throne, and it's grand and beautiful because you're uplifting the Dharma or the knowledge the teacher is going to give you. That's why. So therefore, attend Dharma teaching happily. If you attend happily and you give the feeling of happiness to go to Dharma teachings, you will inspire volunteers to go for teachings. Why? If you inspire the volunteers to go for teachings, when they learn more, it'll be easier for you to tap into their help. But if you always say, oh, I'm lazy, I don't feel like doing, I'm busy, I'm committed, I don't have time, I've got to do work, I've got to survive, I'm too lazy to read this, what is the message you're sending out to another person? You're justifying yourself, and you're trying to look like you're humble. Oh, I'm very humble. See, I'm lazy. I confess I'm lazy. I confess I've got to do this. I can't juggle my time well or whatever, or I'm disappointed. You feel that you're being very humble, but actually you're not being humble. You're being very selfish. By advertising to other people consistently and constantly, no success and zero success, but full failure all the time, you are not inspiring another Dharma student. You are bringing them down if they're not strong. Why? You're always lazy. You cannot make it to teachings. You cannot make it to Tso. You cannot read. You have to survive. You have to work. You have this appointment. You have that appointment. And you're always busy. So after a while, if the person is smart, they're going to look at you and say, no, you're hogwash. You're just pretending. You're just using me for something. Or the person themselves will feel, well, I can be busy too, and I don't have enough time too, and I don't want to do, and they'll be worse than you. Why? Because they're new. So to always say, I'm busy, I can't make it, I can't do it, I've got this appointment, I've got that appointment, I've got work, and to say that all the time will not inspire another person and not bring them higher in attainments. And also, as a committee member, or as a teacher, or as anything, as a teacher, though some of you, I would like you to be teachers. Those are not qualities that teachers should develop. You don't need eminent qualities as a teacher in this time and age. What you need is the basic human qualities: effort, enthusiasm, patience, not to give up. That's what we need as teachers. Do we want to be a teacher? Do we like the respect? Do we like people kowtowing to us? Fine, we have to earn it. How? One day at a time. 1 week at a time. 1 month at a time. By gaining attainments. What's the attainments? Effort, enthusiasm, patience. So therefore, we have Dharma students and Dharma people always making excuses why they can't come to the center. You know, when we didn't have the center, they want a center, and they're praying for a center. When they pray for the center, and the center manifests, and they don't have time for the center, or they don't want the center, or they're not happy with the center, it just shows you that it's their mind. It's their mind. It's very simple. So therefore, if you want to get volunteers to work, you yourself must inspire them. And I told you already, you attend the classes and courses, you do the work, you do your prayers, you do your sadhanas. And sometimes when you're down, you're allowed to be down. You're not supposed to be Mr. or Mrs. Perfect. But the key here is not to be down all the time. Every time. All the time. Every week. Every time you SMS or call or contact or MSN or talk, they're down. They're busy. They've got work. They've got commitment. Every time they're down. Once a year, they're happy. Because you took them out and gave them a free coffee. All the time. How can someone be down all the time? So people like us who are new, if we hang around people who are down and down and down all the time, we're not being compassionate by being near them. We're not being compassionate to them, and we're not being compassionate to ourselves. Why? Because it'll drain our energies down. A. B, we will tell them a message, it's okay to do that. You think you're so qualified to bring them out of their slum? You think you're so qualified to bring them out of their situation? If you are, by now you would have brought them out already. If your lama can't bring them out, who can bring them out? But we have to support, we have to love them. Yes, sometimes love has to be harsh. Sometimes love has to be harsh. So someone's always down, always no time, always cannot make it, is a very bad influence, is a very bad example. And they will never be able to inspire anybody, not even themselves. So therefore, how do we inspire? By those very simple human qualities. Try, push, do, and it will become natural. It will become natural. A word in our sentence that we must always avoid, a sentence is, I don't know, I don't understand. We must avoid that in any center. Why? People come here for help. Imagine we go to the hospital, they say, I don't know. So what do? Go to the veterinarian clinic? What do? I go to the doctor, I don't know, but I will find out. Oh, okay, great. I don't know, but I will find out. That's a good adage to put on. I don't know. I don't understand. I knew. That's got to stop. Like I said, don't go to hospitals that tell you, I don't know. Go to hospitals that say, I know or I don't know, but I'll find out. So you go to centers and everybody, the liaisons, the committee, the subcommittees and the staff and the volunteer, all, it's like a chorus, I don't know. All the time. And then you have different sections, the VPC, the KHEC, the committee, and then the liaison, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. And then the new people coming out the street, just great chorus, but that's not what I'm looking for. So we've got to get out of this chorus mode of, I don't know. I got to stand there with one of those sticks. What's that stick they play with, the conductor? Anybody knows? A baton. I thought that we use that for cheerleaders. Okay, never mind. I think I need a baton. I don't know. I mean, do we want that? Now what we want is, now how can everybody know everything? Even stupid me doesn't know everything. Definitely I don't know everything in Dharma. There's a lot of things I don't know. There's more things I don't know than I know. But we have a new one. I don't know, but I will find out. Oh. I will find out and I'll let you know within a week. I'm still trying to find out. I don't know, but I will not give up. Isn't that nice? Then people come and they go, oh, they try. That's a human quality. Never say I don't know and leave it like that. Never. If you don't know, you need to know because they're asking Dharma. If you know, you'll benefit them and yourself. Never say I don't know. And don't make up something if you don't know. Why? You're playing with people's spirituality. Find out. Find out from reliable sources. Never just make up something and tell them. Never, 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 never. Within the Gelugpa school of Buddhism, it is frowned upon very deeply to simply say, I had a vision, and I'm telling you, or the Buddha's told me, and I'm telling you, or I've discovered a hidden treasure. And I mean, there are people who can do that, but who knows who can and who cannot? Who knows? So in the Gelugpa school of Buddhism, it's very frowned upon because Lama Tsongkhapa doesn't like that. He wants real attainments, real practice, and real enlightenment. He wants it real. So therefore, to say, oh, some god told me, or some fairy told me, or some Dakini told me, or my Lama appeared in my dreams and told me, I've heard people say that before. I've heard of one lady that the Lama, she came to me very serious. I was in Dharamsala. I was staying in Namgyal Monastery, in the Dalai Lama's monastery. I was staying in there because I was attending Dalai Lama's teachings. And one lady show up. She was in her late 50s. She was very serious. She requested audience. She requested divinations. And I said, okay, because I was free. So she came in and she says, I need to be alone because I need to talk about something very private. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll talk. And she says, I don't know how to talk. I don't know if it's bad karma because it's about my Lama. I said, well, if your intention is to put him down, it's bad karma. If your intention is to understand more, it's not bad karma. It's good karma. Why? Because you want to know more. She says, my Lama rapes me every day. And I said, huh? I said, really? I said, who's that? She says, it's Thai Situpa. Thai Situpa Rinpoche rapes me every single day. I said, no, it cannot be. Not Thai Situpa, not any Rinpoche. No, I said, no. She probably threw herself on him naked or something like that. I said, no. Immediately I said, no, but I didn't tell her that. So I said, how does he do that? She says, well, I go to Rumtek Monastery and I hang out and blah, 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 blah. And he visits me every single night and he forces himself on me. And I was thinking, I mean, she looked like me about 6 years ago with hair. And And she was very sincere. She was in slight tears, but she wasn't working it out or nothing. She just said that. And I went, so I did divination and it came out, she's lying. Not that she's lying, she's delusional. So I asked him more details. How does that happen? Does he knock on your door? He scratches on your door? What, he's got his own key or how? She says, no, he comes in my dreams. He comes in my dreams every night and he forces himself on me in my dreams. And I can't say no because he's my guru. So I said, you offer yourself to him? I said, how kind of you. I changed it. I said, how kind of him to accept your offering. Ooh. But I wasn't being mean. And she says every night, so she came out every night, she's been having these dreams and she says, he's very powerful. I said, yes, he is a very high Lama. He's very powerful, but he doesn't do things like that. He doesn't force himself on anyone. And I said, he comes in your dreams. I said, maybe it's just a dream. She says, it can't be a dream. It happens every night. So I said to her, no, dreams can happen every night because I had recurrent dreams for months also. I don't think your Lama is forcing himself on you. I don't think Thai Situpa would do things like that. I don't think so. I have never met him, but I know how high he is. I said, no. So she insisted, and I didn't fight with her. I said, well, why don't you fold your hands to your Lama and say to him, I can't offer this anymore. I said, what else can you do? And she was very happy with that. She said, I try. I said, try harder. So what can you do? She's delusional. There's nothing you can do. So she left some pearls and jewelries here with me. And she said she'd like to visit me again. And I thought, oh. Not in our dreams, I hope. And my red flags went up. So I took the pearls and stuff and I offered it to Namgyal Monastery, to the protector chapel there. They have a Kalurupa chapel. I offered there, made prayers for her. And the next time she tries to see me, I'm sorry to say, I just said I'm busy. Why? There's no way I can help her and she's not looking for help. She's looking for attention. And I've come across that several times from people. Several times. So what's my point? My point is very simple. People have all kinds of delusions and illusions and fantasies and they have all types of visions and they go around telling people this. Go around. All the time. And I've heard it with other eminent lamas. I don't need to get into it right now. I'll tell you another time. I've heard it with other eminent lamas too. So, we can inspire volunteers by just being ourselves and pushing ourselves a little bit more. And more important is set up a system in our center. Don't make big systems and don't make 10 departments. Make 2 or 3 small departments and handle that well. Why? Because you'll get the confidence, you'll know how to deal with it, and you'll grow. And fall with your people. Be disappointed with your people. And be happy with your people. Don't be a leader without putting in the effort, the toil, and the sweat to command people's respect. If you don't put in the toil and the sweat and the time to command people's respect, if you make sweeping statements to volunteers or people, in the beginning they might listen, but after a while they observe you, they won't. Why? It doesn't inspire them. Although you're trying your best, I'm not criticizing, I'm giving you methods. I'm giving you methods. So therefore, it's very important. So we ourselves show an example, we will get volunteers. And so many volunteers will come in. I'm telling you, many people will come in and help. Many people you wouldn't even expect to help. I guarantee you, even people. Let me tell you, people like Susan Lim here, we were having a Kichara House stock party, which means we got our first big shipment of stock. The liaisons went and we were having a big sale at Kichara House. Many of you were not there at that time. That was just last year. And our whole Kichara House was filled with stock, table after table. It was so beautiful. You got to see the pictures. It was exciting. And hundreds of people, I don't know where they came from, were walking in and out, in and out, in and out, and they were buying statues and looking at this and looking at that. And then at the end of that, I showed up and I gave a little Dharma talk, and Susan Lim and Sharon walked in. And Susan Lim just stood there. And I gave her a tata. And I told her to practice Lama Tsongkhapa. That's my feeling is good for her. And then slowly she observed the place. And I'm sure she saw a lot of things like, oh, why like that, why like that, why like that, why like that. But because of her own maturity and her spiritual maturity, she can overcome it. But there was no one that actually held her hands and came in and helped her and said, guided her or do this, do that, because we don't have that facility. But she stuck around. See, people like that stick around because they have their own tenacity, not because we guided them. And now she's a full-fledged liaison. She's put in her resignation at her job. She's worked for the last 6 years. She's put in her full resignation in her job for the last 6 years, and she's going to join us full time. How did that come? As a volunteer. Now, how many more people that can come and help us, like Susan, they don't necessarily have to retire from their job, but volunteer if we had a system set up. If you have a system set up, what? A buddy system where you guide them, not just talk. You can't be someone just talk and talk and not do anything and not show up and always complain you're busy and you're not happy with this, not happy with that. That's not a buddy system. You bring them down. You bring them down. And if we're new in Dharma, we're always hanging around so-called Dharma students who always bring us down. Eventually, they'll bring us down all the way, and we will help them to bring them down even deeper. We need to be very firm with them and say, no, you attend, you do this, and I'll be with you. If not, I'm sorry, I don't have time. That's the truth, what? We don't have time. We have to be firm. So therefore, if we take care of our new people and volunteer, they will definitely do it. Definitely. Definitely. Divisions, what needs to be done? A buddy system, and one person in the committee, I mean, there are many people in the committee, each person take care of two or three people. And a new person comes, by Bangri Tola in Tibetan means by, what's that called? Rotation. So he got this one, the next one, this one gets, this one, next one gets, this one, this one gets, the next one, this one gets, the next one, this one gets, down the row. Rotation system, people. And those people will volunteer the numbers of time. You should really volunteer. And don't start teaching and explaining your own neurosis and your own practice and your own views and thoughts. Why? You're trying to bring them to Kechara House, not your own house. So don't start teaching them all your neurosis. You teach them how to do divination, la. Then you teach them how to do, how to analyze animals' feelings, la. And all types of neuroses that you teach them, and then you start teaching them, oh, you know, if you're busy, you need to make money. Well, you don't you can drop all your responsibilities to the center. It doesn't matter, because you have to make money. You have to survive. That's ridiculous. All of us has to survive. So to drop everything at the center, drop all your spiritual commitments, you have to survive. And then some people even go to length of, well, I have a few gurus, and my guru told me to do that. So you switch gurus at your own convenience. When this guru says what you like, you switch here. When this guru doesn't say, you switch that, and you tell the students of both gurus, you tell the gurus, students of this side, that you're doing this with this, with this side, you're doing this with this, and you cover yourself back and forth. Highway to hell. Highway to hell. Why is that a highway to hell? You're already in hell now, making your mind suffer. You create more hell by avoiding your real self, by even using enlightened beings to cover yourself. Very sad. Very, very sad. And that's what's going to happen everywhere in the world. It's normal. We have compassion on them, but we sometimes have the compassion with wisdom. Are we encouraging them? Are we helping them? Or are we actually helping them to become worse? Because when I was in Student Darjeeling in the United States for many years, I came across students like that. I was very nice to them. I gave them food. I took care of them because I was the cook. But I didn't encourage them. Some of them even came and said nasty things about Geshe-la to me. I listened to them and I asked them questions. But I didn't fall into it. And if they came again and again to talk to me about the same thing, I would say, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't agree with what you say. And if you want to talk about that, I'd rather not. But you don't face the truth. You're not examining your guru, they tell me. I said, I've already examined him. I accepted him as my guru. I don't examine my guru after I've accepted him. After I accepted my guru, then I examined him. No, I examined him before. So maybe it's okay for you to examine my guru, because you have not accepted him. But it's not okay for me. So when you keep saying that to me, I'm not helping you. Why? Because I'm trying to encourage you toward learning the Dharma. You're trying to encourage me away from the Dharma. I would tell them straight out. Some of them can tell me nasty things about my guru. I've heard very nasty things about my guru again and again and again. I've heard nasty things. They come. I was in a Dharma center. I wasn't always on the throne. I was just like you guys sitting there in the audience for many years, most of my life. And I've heard them all come and say very nasty things about my guru to me, and to other people, and try to break up the center. Some even leave. Some come back and apologize. Some never come back. I saw the whole thing. Why? Because they have their own neurosis. They have their own problems. So what can we do? Some, we have to just accept the fact we can't help them. Let them be. But they planted the seeds for Dharma. And that's it. Very, very simple. If we have a Dharma center, we have pujas, we have Dharma teachings, and we stay at home and do offerings on the altar, we call that Dharma. That's not Dharma. That's escape. That's escape. When so much effort's been put in Dharma, look at all you guys making this much effort, coming and showing up and doing pujas and prayers and listening to Dharma talks. I'm putting my effort in. And then there's some Mr. Tom, Dick, and Harry or Jane Schmain or whatever sitting at home doing little offerings and saying, oh, you know, I'm doing Dharma. See, I'm at home doing offerings. I do my own sadhana. What? No. No, that's an excuse to avoid. you can't face yourself. That's the truth. We're putting so much effort, so much work, and we all have to survive. I have to survive. How about if I just throw off my robes and put on a suit and go and work? Okay, not a suit, a hustler's outfit. I'd rather hustle, it'd be better. I'm a better hustler than a businessman. Next time you see me on Jalalullah Hustling, just pretend you don't know me. Hi, Rimp. And then walk by. Don't say Rinpoche, just say hi, Rimp. I wouldn't want anybody to know there's a Rinpoche hustler. I've done everything. I've done a little bit of acting in America. Didn't pursue it, too bad for me. Maybe too bad. I've done commercials. I've worked in retail. I've done secretary jobs. I've done gardening. I've done cook. I've done dishwasher, I mean years ago. I've done modeling. I've done catwalk. I've done working for agencies in Singapore, looking for casting. I went in there and they hired me on the spot to do casting. I had to run up to see the producers in Singapore. I can't remember their names anymore. I did all that stuff. So I know what it is to survive. I know what it is. There were times my students, no offense, didn't support me, didn't take care of me. I had to go work. Or I tried to work. Or I pretended I was working. I went through a lot of ups and downs. So what's my point? My point is, I know where you're coming from. Don't think I come from Shangri-La and I don't know anything. Oh, Rinpoche, you're always sitting up in the mountains meditating. You don't know nothing. All you know is how to meditate. No, I know more than you about the workforce. Trust me. I know. And when I was, the most difficult industry I've seen is the entertainment business. Most difficult. When we went to do those little shows and catwalk back and forth, the things that people talk, the designers, the people who get together, the makeup people, and the people who coordinate, they actually scream and shout, and they're so not nice, some of them. I've seen some models being screamed at in the back until they cry. But then when they go out and walk up and down, they got to pretend everything's all right. And all we can do is walk by and pat them on the back. That's all. I've seen it all. But what is that suffering for? These designers, these models, these entertainment people, these retail people, these business people, all these people, what is it for? You make the money and then what? But at least in Dharma, we suffer for a reason. We suffer for happiness. We suffer to get to happiness. We suffer for enlightenment. We suffer to bring happiness to others. The suffering has a purpose. The suffering has a purpose. In other jobs, it has a purpose, yes, but the purpose ends when you get your money. Listen carefully. The purpose ends when you get your money. With your money, you go to a higher purpose. With your money, you go for a higher purpose. What's the higher purpose? Spiritual attainments. So at least in Dharma, yes, we fight like cats and dogs. Yes, we hate each other. Yes, we hate the guru. Yes, we disappear. Yes, we send nasty SMSs. Yes, we don't like sometimes this person or that person doesn't do the job. We all have that. That's everywhere in life. Then people say, well, why in Dharma? How ridiculous. Go to the hospital. Why is everybody sick? Duh. Of course you go to the Dharma center. Everybody's sick. That's why they're going to the Dharma center. They need mental help. At least they're going for help. Go to the hospital and complain. Why is everybody sick? I hate it here. Everybody's sick. Yeah. Even some people die, you know. Yo. Stupid. Of course in the Dharma center it has that. But what's the purpose? The purpose is going for, you're suffering, you're fighting, you're working, you're tired, you're pushing, you're putting your effort, you're exerting yourself for something higher, the happiness of yourself and others through spiritual attainments and practice. Everything else that you do ends right there when you get the money. That's it. And then when you have too much money, you got to let everybody know you have money. And that's a suffering. Some people have a lot of money. They don't want anybody to know because they don't want to give anything. So they dress like a beggar. And then all the in-betweens like you guys and me. It's where once you get the money, it ends. And then all that fighting and all that bitchiness and all that difficulty and all the hurt and pain and backstabbing you went through. It's just for money. And you just look at your money and go, for this? Okay, I got my house. I got my car. Now what? Now what? At least in Dharma, it has a purpose. And therefore, be happy to suffer for others. Be happy to attend meetings for others. Be happy to attend Dharma talks for others. Be happy to attend pujas for others. Be happy to fight for others. Be happy to be patient for others. Be happy to participate for others. Why? When you are happy to participate, do all this for others, the more teachings you go to and you endure. Teachings are difficult. They're long. They make you sleepy. Sometimes they criticize you. Sometimes they hurt you. Sometimes they make you happy. Teachings are very difficult to attend. I know because I've attended thousands of hours of teachings. But you attend teachings out of compassion. You stay awake out of compassion. You stay alert out of compassion. You change your schedule around. Like Miss Ashley, she's got to work. She's a business. She's working in a company. She got herself out. She's here. She took her free day off. I don't know, a sick day. She called in. She says, oh, my husband's, you know, getting a sex job. I don't know. She's here. For the fourth time. She's here. So what's my point is suffer for others. So when other people see you doing this, they respect you. They say, oh, you went for the talk, huh? And then they think, oh, I couldn't make it. I didn't make it. I didn't want to make it. All degrees. And then when you suffer for other people, there's a purpose. So when you attend these things, that's why you collect merit. Because you're attending for others. You're doing for others. That's why there's merit. Senjengi dene yasonam yasagore sena. Sena in Tibetan means independence on other sentient beings, we collect the merit. How do we collect merit? Make offerings to a table? Be patient with my bed? And show compassion to a pillow? Om mani padme hum. Then I pass your oral tongue. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. Doesn't work well. You have to be compassionate and patient to someone who gets on your nerves, who always disappoints you, who always hurts you. That's how you show your patience and compassion. So it's dependent on others. So when we're in Dharma things, I mean, Ben can be at his place designing whatever and making money, but he's here. He's not making money, he's hanging out here. He should make it more worthwhile for a purpose. Some of us suffer because our parents freak out because they join a cult. And then when they go back there, they get it from their parents. I got it from my parents when I was a kid. I was told I was in a cult. I got slapped and beaten, you guys all know. So I still did it. So if you have to go back and make up a story for mommy and daddy, at least collect some merit out of it. Don't sleep all the way during the teachings and go home and tell mommy, I was with my friends camping. I mean, you didn't collect any merit because you slept through the whole thing. And when you go home, you lie. You're going to need a very big Vajrasattva statue. Very big. Think about it. So we're suffering here. This is suffering. Come on. It's afternoon. I'm getting up 1 hour earlier than normal. I'm sitting here talking to... I'm serious. I'm getting 1 hour early. I went to bed at 6 a.m. this morning because I go run last night. Oh, I had to go run outside because the gym is closed. I hate running outside. Run up and down the hill. I dragged the monster with me. I was running like that. The monster was behind me. And then I have a special rule. If you run with me, then you can only stay one arm's length away from me. You gotta tell me stories so I won't be bored while I'm running. So this guy's about 10 arm lengths away, walking. I don't know why I'm exceptionally tired today. I'm thinking. I told him, you're tired every day. And I have to do my 45-minute run or I won't be beautiful, slim, gorgeous, handsome, and movie quality so that when I go to Hong Kong to teach, I won't be discovered for a movie. Oh, oops. Cult. Yes, I want to do a Dharma movie. I want to do a Dharma show. I want to do something Dharma. I want to make Dharma big. Get me in. Get me in. Get me in. Anything entertainment. In. I'll do anything. I'll sleep with anyone. I'll even do nudity if you adjust the pictures. Because I have a teeny little stretch mark, just one around here, because I have big muscles, so it's shrunk. JP, I did have muscles. JP's like, yeah. I saw. One more move out of you, and you know what I'm going to do? Om Jivang Hong Pe, and tomorrow morning. Jivan and Mr. Ngao are very kind. I'm younger than them, and I'm always making fun of their head, and they take it and they smile. Shows you their level. Actually, by right, I dare not. It's not respectful. They're older than me. It's very disrespectful. But I do this, you can see their level. They can even laugh. It's improved. Oh, it is? Okay. And what's with this one piece coming down here? Cut it off, for God's sakes. Cut it off. It's just one piece coming down to here. It's going to be down to here. You'll be like this in the wind. Jeez, it looks like one of those Chinese Mandarin eunuchs with one Q. It's like, these are you want. Ah, yo, cut it off, save you trouble. More? Mr. Ngao was very intelligent. He just went... He didn't laugh too loud, and Mrs. Ngao sitting there like... Daring Lama. That's right. Isn't he wonderful? Somewhere he says more. Okay, you asked for it, Jivan. You'll be with me for many decades. You're going to get more. More, 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 more. I love victims. Oh. Then he said, just call me Rinpoche. Don't go. Thank you, Guruji. It's like me going to the Dalai Lama. Your Holiness, what's inside is more important. And His Holiness will be like, oh no, His Holiness won't do that ever. His golden face. No, I dare not. I'm just kidding. I take that back. So, Wendy's looking for a tissue because she's never seen a funnier movie. Oh God, Rajeshwari is getting her emotional revenge. Years of pent-up frustration of being an Indian housewife. Rajeshwari is sitting there saying to Tara, more, 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 more. Oh, Daddy, do more, more. And talk about freedom. And I want a phone, more. And pay my phone bill, more. Next slide, she's praying for Jivan to be her wife and she'll be his husband. If the world stays this way, it could be different too, but never mind. Let's not go into the differences. And you see what a llama has to look at. I'm looking at Ben, he's like... Don't only look at me, let me tell you, there's a lot of entertainment looking at you guys. That's right, and there's James. James poses very well, you know, to make sure he doesn't spear anything. It's a cover for his latest CD. Oh, money, pay me home. He wants to be the new Emi Oi of Kuala Lumpur. He's going to be Jamie Ui, Oi, whatever. And Cha is incredible. He's taken away from his meditation, yoga, sleep. He's actually listening to Dharma like this. Actually, it's an itch, huh? Notice if Cha attends a Dharma talk, it's never without a wall. That's right. Do you know why Cha's unmarried and a virgin? Because he makes love to walls. So, you know, in the past in China, you look at the white sheet. In Cha's case, you look at the wall. I think. Even JT understood that. Even Millie understood that. Yes. Girly Ui sat on the floor because she's tired of being a victim. She figures if she hides behind Paris's hair, I won't see her. You're disturbing me again. Stop laughing so hard at the stupid jokes. Otherwise, I can't go on. If you stop laughing, I go on, what? So you all can do a Bill Keith look. Let me see who else contains himself. Oh, Jenny looked at everybody. She's allowed to laugh. Ben always tries to laugh without showing his teeth because I make fun of his purple gums. Don't look at his gums, though. They're purple. He can't help it. Unlike my pink ones and my double eyelid. Pink gums are in. Can you see that? I mean, purple gums like Ben. Like, that's why when he smiles, he's like... Just shows you his teeth. All right, now where was I before you guys got into it? Okay, so that's how we get volunteers. We got to identify what we need, and then we got to have a buddy system where they can call us. And you know what? I thought of one more thing, and which is if we can have a buddy system where these new people can meet up with us, maybe outside of the center once a week for yam chai, for tea, for dosa, for masala, for something. Just to get together for a few hours and talk. I mean, we all like to socialize. What's better than socialize with potential Dharma students who we can help them so much? Why, in the beginning, they're not going to see attainments, they're not going to see Buddhahood, they're not going to see Bodhicitta, they're not going to see saving the world. What they're going to see is a kind person who takes the time and they talk and they just, you know, gossip. Gossip for Dharma. Suffer for Dharma. Push yourself for Dharma. This all has a purpose. So that's how we can get more volunteers in. That's for every Dharma center everywhere. Very important. And then whatever, we have meetings, we should follow what we said in the meetings. We should follow. And then the next one is the center building. The building of the center. If possible, our center should be in a place that doesn't disturb the neighbors and the residences. Why? After you go in there, you pay the rental, you put the deposits in, and then you put in renovations, you paint, you spend all this money that's hard-earned by charities. And then neighbors complain, they report you. How? That's happened to a center, one of mine, in the past, where the neighbors complained tremendously. It made it very uncomfortable to congregate there. Very uncomfortable. So a center should be in a place that has ample parking, or easy parking, or public parking. That's very important. And in the center, it should be kept very clean. Whether the center is big or small, it should be kept very clean. And we should be very, very conscientious of people, because a lot of people have not gone for meditation sessions. They can't sit on the floor for hours and hours. It's very, very painful for people, and we have to think about that. Whether they want to sit on the floor or not, it's up to them, but we should provide something. So in the center, we should provide chairs, we provide comfortable sitting arrangements for them, and it should be airy. It should be comfortable for them. It's very, very important. And therefore, also in the center, we need to have good representations of the three jewels. We need to have the Buddhas, and the Dharma and the Sangha, that's according to what we are sharing with other people. So we should have a very good image of the Buddha. Why? If you want to encourage other people to have beautiful images of the Buddha, you should have something to show. And on top of that, a center's Buddha image should be as big as possible, as big as possible, as big as possible. Not as small as possible, not as cheapskate as possible. Why? There are many, many reasons. The Buddha statue, the Dharma statue, the Buddha and the stupa and all that should be as big as possible. Why? You want to have big aspirations, you need to make merit. And when people come to the center, some people only come once. Some people come again and again. It's the only place where they can seek refuge and help, physical help. So if your image is very big, it has beautiful mantras inside and a lot of holy images inside. Example, you have a large Tsongkhapa statue, you have thousands of Tsongkhapa images inside. If the people come to the center, you accelerate their Dharma growth. How? They collect more merits by prostrating to something so vast and holy. So your Dharma image should be as big as possible. People don't understand that. Even in our homes, it should be as big as possible. Why? How much Dharma do we do? So at least when we make offerings, instead of making offerings to one Tsongkhapa, we're making it to 1,000 Tsongkhapas. So it should be as big as possible. That's why in our retreat center, we need to make very big statues. And for people who understand that concept, the bigger the statue, the better. The better we can sponsor, the bigger, the more virtuous. Definitely. That's not something of Tibetan tradition. That's all Buddhist traditions. If you go anywhere in the world, all Buddhist traditions make huge statues into mountains or temples, wherever. And why is that only allowed for a temple or a mountainside? Surely it's allowed in our house. So the Dharma Center should have as big, as beautiful statues as possible. As big as beautiful. And iconographically correct. Why? It should be correct because people are going to use that as visualization. So it's less explanation. And then the money put towards statues should be done happily because it's towards something to worship and to pray. It is something that embodies the three jewels that will appear to us in that form because we can't see them directly yet. So the statue should be as big as possible, painted up as beautiful as possible, and mantra-sized, mantras and images as much as possible, as much as possible. And the offerings in front should be as beautiful and wide and rich and as abundant as possible. Why? Because the Dharma Center is not for one person. It is for the whole community. It is for the whole area. So when we make beautiful, grand, large offerings, silver and gold and precious items, and it's clean and well-made, it represents our spiritual practice. According to His Holiness, the 13th Dalai Lama, one who abandons or neglects spiritual offerings is a person it indicates one who has not strong spiritual convictions. That is a direct quote from His Holiness, the 13th Dalai Lama, Bodhisattva Warrior by Glenn Mullen. You can look in that book. You can look. I have sources to say all these. So therefore, the statue should be made as possible. And people who are involved in making statues, it is a privilege that you can touch them and you can be involved with them and you can market them. That's the modern word to market them. And to make them as beautiful as possible and as wonderful as possible. Why? Every person that takes it home will be first enraptured by the image's quality and the beauty of it. And then when they understand the image's nature, they won't be so much about the outside anymore. They'll know the quality. So therefore, in the end, whatever the Buddha statues look like, they'll respect very much. Very, very much. So our Dharma statues should be beautiful and highest quality. Iconographically correct. That's why I'm very particular. And as many mantras and many images inside. And when we come to making Dharma images and Dharma statues, we should be very happy to do that. As big as possible. Example, I want to put a down payment for a large Setrap statue that is exactly like Ganden Chartres. Exactly. And because it has an entourage and it's beautiful, it's well made, it's made from Nepal. It takes about 2 years to make. How much is it, Ruby? That's about 45,000-50,000, not including transport and gold and all that. So you can estimate about 80,000 ringgit. I want to do that. Why? I want to put that in our retreat center. Why not order then? Because it's going to take another 3, 4, 5 years, so we might as well have it first. And those offer a lot of refuge for you, because refuge for people and protection. Setrap in this country will grow. It will grow. And the practice of Setrap will grow. You mark my words. It will grow. It will definitely grow. And the Setrap in our center, if I may say so with humility, will show signs in the future. If it hasn't already, it will. You don't doubt. My tanka of Setrap in my audience room has shown signs already in the past. People have witnessed it. Very obvious signs. You can ask Cha. Very obvious. Our Setrap statue will show signs clear to people and show indications. It will require our harmony, our hard work, and our dedication in the center. And from that, Setrap will be very pleased. And through the collection of our merits, he will manifest signs. You will see. There's not a doubt. So we should have beautiful images so that when people come and make merits, they make offerings, they offer a stone, they offer a pearl to our images in our center. They're not offering to one image, they're offering to 1,000 Tsongkhapas, 10,000 Tsongkhapas, so that we can accelerate their Dharma practice, accelerate their merits. The reason to have beautiful images in our center is to accelerate people's spiritual practice. Very simple, very logical. It should be as big as possible. People should scream and fight and kick and have cat fights about who sponsors the statue, who makes it big. Oh, yes. And those images that I give out to people, those tatas and statues I give out, let me say very honestly, you guys, donate it to me. Buy it and give it to me. I will give it out to people who will pray. Give it to me. Go to the outlets and buy and give it to me. I give out hundreds and hundreds of thousands of statues and gifts and books to people. I went to MPH just last week and bought $1,900 worth of books, Dharma books. And last night I gave quite a few out already. Quite a few. So it's for my angpaos. When I get angpao, I just buy it. Why? What am I going to use it for? I'm here for what? To spread the Dharma. I think of myself as a pipe. Just let the thing flow through. Give me statues. Give me tatas. Not once, not twice, all the time. Give me Dharma books. Give me. I will give it out to people because I'm in a position to meet more people than you. I will give it. So we can benefit people. So therefore, our Dharma center should be in a place that's clean. It should be well maintained. We shouldn't have stains. We shouldn't wait for another committee member to clean this. And we should make sure the walls are clean. We should make sure the floor is clean. Why? Cleanliness is part of the practice before we engage in meditation. And cleaning Dharma centers is a way of purifying our karma. There was a monk during Buddha's time who was very slow. Very slow. And when he would memorize one thing, he'd forget the one he memorized. When he'd go back to memorize the first thing, he'd forget the second thing he memorized. And he really worked very hard. He was very sad. He went to the Buddha crying and explained. And the Buddha in his omniscience said to him, clean the temple, clean the courtyard, and clean the shoes of the monks of the Sangha. And when you're cleaning it, visualize this as your mind. And the dirt is your obscurations, delusions, and recite this, Du Pong Jima Pong, Du Pong Jima Pong. He taught the monk. Listen to what the Buddha has said. So the monk, with a lot of faith in his guru, at that time in Shakyamuni, did that. He went and cleaned the temple very well. And he did it not as a job, not as a put down. All the other monks are scholars and masters. They're teaching, they're running around the villages, and people throw flowers on them because they're so in awe of their knowledge. But this monk didn't have that. He didn't care because the guru gave him instructions. And he cleaned and he wiped and he did that mantra as Buddha has taught him. He purified a lot of negative karma by the power of cleaning the temple. And in that very life, he attained arahatship, meaning he doesn't have to return to samsara in one life. He didn't attain Buddhahood, arahatthood. Pretty good. That is a practice that came from the Buddha, not from us or me, to clean temples. You sweat. It's hard. It's difficult. For what? To provide it for a place to meditate and pray. That's why there's a purpose in your sweat, blood, sweat, and tears. Clean. And it should be organized. It should look very nice. Be very particular how it's set up. Make sure everything's set up well. Why? Everything in your Dharma center is an example to new people. Everything in your Dharma center is an example to new people. Everything. So everything should be well and nice. It becomes an example whether you think like that or not. The images and holy items you have in there should be examples of how they can do things at home. The holy images you have in the center should be objects that accelerate people's spiritual practice. For what? Out of compassion. Our center is there out of compassion. We volunteer, we work, and we give our time for the Dharma out of compassion. Out of compassion.